Welcome to Talking History. This is your host, Brian LeBeau, and happy holidays. One of the holidays we mark in this season is Christmas, and for many of our listeners, this means they will not only be recalling the birth of Jesus, but also his entire life. And the recollection of Jesus' life will not only come from our attendance at church or our reading of the New Testament, but also from the depictions of his life in film. And that's the subject of our interview this week with Adele Reinhardt in a show we have titled Jesus of Hollywood. Kathleen McDonough returns to Talking History, this time looking at the accuracy of production designs in films about the ancient world, the sets, costumes, and props, and what assumptions we make about a historical time period as a result. And Fiona Beattie will join us once again to offer us another of her sights of the week, this time a place where we can gain further information on the portrayal of Jesus in film. But first, let's look at a few items of related historical interest in the news. Mel Gibson's film The Passion of the Christ, which is still fresh in many people's minds, and the celebration of Christmas have prompted increased discussion in the press about the life and death of Jesus. And much of that media attention has been focused on Jesus' crucifixion. Historians quoted in these articles confirm the brutality of the execution. By definition, crucifixion involved the act of putting a person to death by nailing or binding the hands and feet to a cross. But as one anthropologist added, it was one of the cruelest and most humiliating forms of punishment in the ancient world. The intent was obvious, explains Paul Harvey of Pennsylvania State University. It was to be a spectacular, theatrical, public capital punishment. It was meant not only to be a deterrent, but to demonstrate the power of the state in for public entertainment. Jesus may be the best known of those crucified, but he was by no means alone. For about 1,000 years, thousands met their fate in this gruesome manner in the Mediterranean world. Alexander the Great is said to have had 2,000 survivors from the siege of Tyre crucified on the shores of the Mediterranean. And the Romans put to death in the same manner some 6,000 slaves who participated in the slave revolt of 73 BC led by Spartacus. They were crucified for miles along a Roman highway for all to see. Historians also report that the crucifixion of Jesus actually helped bring an end to the method of execution among the Romans. After Emperor Constantine the Great became a Christian, some 300 years after the death of Jesus, he discontinued its use in the Roman Empire in reverence for Jesus. In another related bit of news, archaeologists think they found a cave where John the Baptist baptized many of his followers. They base their theory on thousands of shards from ritual jugs used for foot cleansing and wall carvings telling the story of the biblical preacher. Only a few other artifacts linked to the New Testament figures have ever been found, so the cave is potentially a major discovery in biblical archaeology. But some scholars say the findings aren't enough to support this theory, one adding that short of an inscription with John's name in the cave, there could never be conclusive proof. And the Church of England has caused a stir by questioning whether the biblical story of the three wise men is accurate, as related in the King James Version of the Bible. In a new prayer book, Common Worship, the Church's General Synod has approved of the characters of the story being referred to as magi in preference to wise men, as well as noted that it is unclear from the original scriptures how many of them visited the baby Jesus, or even their gender. Well, Merry Christmas anyway. When we return, Adele Reinhardt tells us about Hollywood's depictions of Jesus. Kathleen McDonough assesses the accuracy of production designs in films on the ancient world. And Fiona Beattie offers us another of her sights of the week. This is Talking History. Jesus films, as they are often titled, have been quite popular. But how accurate are they? Or perhaps better put, how they treated the Jesus story as told in Scripture and as known to historians. Talking History's Eileen Dugan took these up and other related questions with her guest, Adele Reinhardt.
Mel Gibson's recent film, The Passion of the Christ, has prompted many to reflect not only on their own religious beliefs, but also on previous filmic presentations of the story of Jesus. The Passion has been criticized for its extreme violence, and, despite some last-minute scene deletions, Gibson's portrayal of the Jews became the center of heated debate well before the film was even released. But is Gibson's Passion the only film about Jesus that has encountered charges of anti-Semitism? How have films treated the story of Jesus? And how have actors portrayed him? With us today to explore the genre of the Jesus movie is Dr. Adele Reinhardt, Dean of Graduate Studies and Research at Wilfrid Laurier University in Waterloo, Ontario. Dr. Reinhardt's books include Scripture on the Silver Screen and the upcoming Jesus of Hollywood. Welcome, Dr. Reinhardt.
Good morning.
Why have Jesus movies generally been popular, albeit before Gibson's film at least, not necessarily blockbusters?
The Jesus story is one of the best-known stories in Western culture. And given our fascination with seeing stories portrayed visually, I think it's a natural fit. Although often Jesus movies get mixed reviews because, as with any book adaptation, the film version doesn't always live up to the way that we've imagined it and can't portray all of the richness of the text.
How is bringing the story of Jesus to the screen much like adapting any other long, complex story?
Well, it's exactly the same. It's the challenge of condensing a lengthy story into usually a story that has a simpler plot that can be told in 2 to 3 hours, presenting visual images from words on the page. It faces in those regards the same challenges as adapting any kind of a book. There are additional challenges, however, and I'll just mention a couple of them. One is that with respect to the Jesus story, we have 4 versions, not one. And these are the 4 Gospels that are in the New Testament. Of course, there are lots of other stories about Jesus that aren't canonized, but these are the ones that people are more familiar with. And these 4 Gospels tell 4 different stories, and so the filmmaker then also has to make some choices. Are they going to base themselves on one version? Are they going to try to harmonize among the versions? And if that's the case, they're going to have to pick and choose among the details. And another challenge related to that is the fact that this is sacred scripture. It's not just a favorite novel or a play by Shakespeare, but it's sacred, and there are many people for whom this is formative in their own lives and their own faith. So you face another challenge as well in terms of how to pitch it to your audience. Are you pitching it to an audience of believers, in which case you want to make sure, I think, to be reverent, to somehow convey the sanctity of the story? Are you pitching it to some other audience in which other issues might be relevant? So those are 2 of the issues, and they come to the fore in the visual portrayal of Jesus. How are you going to portray him as a figure on the screen?
Faith aside, what elements make the story of the Passion of the Christ a good story?
Well, it's a dramatic story. It's a story that follows a similar pattern to many others that we see on the silver screen, where you have an innocent man who is wrongfully put to death, and that, of course, creates the possibility for drama, for emotion, for all kinds of suspense, tension, and so on. And that's certainly part of what makes for a good film in our culture.
And you mentioned already how directors also make the choice of how they are going to portray Jesus himself in terms of casting. And how would you describe some of the actors who have played that role?
Well, the favorite one, of course, is Jeffrey Hunter in The King of Kings. Often, these Jesus figures in the epic films, let's say from the 50s on, look more or less like the stereotypical Jesus figure of Christian art. You've got lightish, brown hair about to his shoulders, he's got a bit of a beard, fairly angular features, and slight in build, and certainly not very Jewish looking, even though we know from the story itself that Jesus was Jewish. So that's often how he's portrayed. In the earlier silent movies, we have a very gaunt Jesus with usually a pretty grim look on his face, and his eyes heavily made up with eyeliner on top and bottom so that his eyes really stand out in the black and white screen. screen.
Sounds like he's portrayed as being rather gothic.
In a way, yeah, sometimes.
Another choice that directors often make is to make parallels between the story of Christ and issues in contemporary society. How do they do that?
Well, we can look at some concrete examples. One example is Jesus Christ Superstar, where Judas is played by an African-American actor. And in the dialogue and the music, there are many allusions and references to the civil rights movement in the United States. So analogies are drawn in that case with the situation of the Jews as an oppressed people under Roman rule in the first century, and African Americans as people that have experienced oppression and slavery in the United States. In a film like Jesus of Montreal, there's a very elaborate allegory that is taking place, whereby the conflict in the passion story between Jesus and authorities, whether Roman or Jewish, is an allegory for conflict between society and religious institutions in contemporary Quebec.
And what about feminism?
Feminism. Oh, yeah, that's an important issue as well. And one of the interesting things in doing a history of the Jesus movies is to take a look at the changing portrayal of women, in particular Jesus' mother and Mary Magdalene. So that we find in later films that the women's roles are really played up. They're given much more prominence than in some of the earlier films, but often still in a way that preserves traditional hierarchical family relationships. So one good example is in Zeffirelli's Jesus of Nazareth from the late 70s. You have Joseph, Mary, and Jesus when Jesus is a young boy, and it's very clear that Joseph is the head of the household and Mary is there to support him, and it's a fairly traditional family configuration. In more recent movies, for example, in the 2003 movie The Gospel of John, Mary Magdalene is given a fairly prominent role, and she's included, for example, at the Last Supper, she's portrayed as being present around the table.
Okay, I think it's time that we deal with three films that have been rather controversial, at least in my time, The Life of Brian,
oh, yeah,
The Last Temptation of Christ, and the most recent, Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ.
Okay, Life of Brian, that's really a great movie. And it's really not a Jesus movie, it's a Brian movie. And I think we need to keep that in mind. It was attacked for being irreverent with respect to Jesus, but in fact it's not irreverent at all. Jesus appears there in a few scenes, usually very far off in the distance, in very stereotypical, pious terms. But the movie has a good time with the cliches of the Jesus film genre and many other cliches as well in portraying the life of Brian, who is mistaken for a messianic figure and tries to live up to that role. I think the criticism of that film was really misplaced, and it was a send-up not of Jesus or a faith in Jesus, but of some of the cliches and stereotypes around Jesus' portrayal in popular culture.
Why was The Last Temptation of Christ so controversial?
The Last Temptation of Christ was controversial even before it came out because of the last segment of the film. The film, and I think it's really important to realize this, it is not meant to be a life of Jesus. It is not based primarily or directly on the Gospels. It is a film adaptation of a novel by Nikos Kazantzakis. So we can't really hold it to standards of reverence. It's a fascinating film because it shows us a figure who is really tormented by inner voices and by compulsions to do certain things, and he doesn't know if he's driven by God or by Satan. In the last segment of the film, we're shown a kind of a dream sequence whereby Jesus on the cross perceives himself to be visited by a young woman who claims to be a representative of God, who takes him off the cross, and in this dream vision, he marries Mary Magdalene, she dies, then he marries Mary and Martha of Bethany, has children, leads a normal life, leads a domestic life. The film was controversial because it showed Jesus in this film sequence is having sex and having sexual relationships as if that's the last temptation. But in fact, the last temptation is really the life of domesticity, a normal life, a life with family and children, and just an ordinary human life. But it turns out to be a dream. He goes back on the cross, and there's a wonderful symbolic resurrection scene, which I think is one of the nicest of all the resurrection scenes in the Jesus movie genre. So again, I think that people who protested that movie, well, they protested before they even saw it, but if they had gone to see it, I think they would see that it's not meant to be a literal life of Jesus, and it raises some very interesting questions. Now, Mel Gibson's movie, on the other hand, was controversial before it came out because of concerns that it would fuel anti-Semitism. The concerns like this arise with just about every Jesus movie that bases itself on the Gospels, because the Gospel accounts of the Passion story are themselves very problematic in terms of how they portray the Jews and some of the Jewish role in the events leading up to Jesus' death. And some of the lines, particularly in Matthew's Gospel, where Pilate washes his hands and says, "I'm innocent of this man's blood," and the Jews say, "Let his blood be on us and on our children," those have resonated through the history of Jewish-Christian relations, usually in a very negative way. And that whole part of the story is very problematic with respect to the Christian charge that the Jews killed Jesus, and these are things that echo down through our own times. So there's always a concern in anticipation of a new Jesus movie as to how that's going to be portrayed. And I think those concerns with respect to Mel Gibson's movie were very well justified. Many of the other movies take some steps, whether they're successful or not is really a difficult question, but at least they make some attempt to nuance the portrayal of the Jews and the Jewish role in the Passion account. And often I think they correctly place more responsibility on Pilate, which I think from a historical point of view really should be given the major responsibility for the crucifixion.
How have other films dealt with the issue of the role of the Jewish people? For example, Zeffirelli's Jesus of Nazareth I thought was interesting.
Yes, well, Zeffirelli plays up a number of Pharisees that the Gospels tell us were actually very attracted to Jesus' message. And so he gives them a prominent voice, for example, in the trial. But the other thing that Zeffirelli does is he creates a fictional character named Zerah, who is a scribe. And many of the negative things that the Gospels attribute to the high priest Caiaphas or to the Jewish leadership more generally in Zeffirelli's movie are attributed to Zerah. And I think that's his way of trying to deal with it. So Caiaphas comes off as a more complex and a more sympathetic character than he does in some of the other movies. But my comment on that is I'm not sure that it's so helpful in terms of Jewish-Christian relations, because Zerah is clearly a Jewish character. So what if he's fictional? I'm not sure how that really helps. But it was an attempt to deal with the issue. Other films, for example, a very interesting and also controversial film in its time was Cecil B. DeMille's silent movie from 1927, The King of Kings, which portrays a fairly negative and kind of anti-Semitic view of Caiaphas as a money-hungry, power-hungry priest. But it localizes that stereotype to Caiaphas and generally doesn't load too much onto the crowd. So in the trial scene before Pilate, this line, "Let his blood be on us and on our people," is attributed to Caiaphas, and Caiaphas says, "Let his blood be on me and on me alone," which is very significant because it means it doesn't extend to all the Jewish people. It's localized in Caiaphas. So that was DeMille's way of trying to deal with the issue. He also came under criticism from B'nai B'rith and other Jewish groups.
As I recall, he had to make some cuts as well before the film was released.
Yeah, he made some changes as well, as did D.W. Griffith in his film Intolerance, where he has a whole segment on the what he calls the Judean story. He had to cut a lot of it out because of protests by Jewish groups.
Well, we only have a moment remaining, but what is your own favorite Jesus movie or portrayal of Jesus?
My absolute favorite Jesus movie is Jesus of Montreal, which is really on the borders of the Jesus film genre. It's a film about a group of actors that put on a passion play. And it's not as tied to the biblical text in a literalistic way as some of the other films are, so it has a lot more freedom. But it deals with the biblical text in a very playful, in a way that's both playful and serious. And it's the one film that, for me, since I'm not a Christian, and I didn't grow up with this as my foundational story, but this is the one film that made me understand why Jesus would be a compelling figure to so many people.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Reinhartz.
My pleasure.
We have been talking with Dr. Adele Reinhartz, Dean of Graduate Studies and Research at Wilfrid Laurier University in Waterloo, Ontario, author of Scripture on the Silver Screen and Jesus of Hollywood.
Given the large number of films made on the life of Jesus, it's not surprising that there are many different places where you can learn more about those films. Here to tell you about one of the more extensive virtual sites is Talking History's Fiona Beattie.
Jesus Captured in Celluloid, Scripture on the Screen. The subjects warrant further investigation. And there's a website designed to do just that, called Jesus Reel to Reel, as in reality and cinema reel. The site was originally set up as a resource for a graduate course at the Institute of Pastoral Studies, Loyola University, Chicago, taught by Richard Ascoff of Queen's Theological College, Ontario, Canada, and Peter Gilmore of Loyola University. It has developed into a wide-ranging and highly extensive site with online links to related electronic journals and scholarly texts. If you'd like to read film reviews, click on the Hollywood Jesus site. And if you've stamina left for more, check out the exhaustive bibliography categorized under Jesus in Film, the Bible in Film, Religion, Theology in Film, Other Works of Interest, and Film Analysis. There are over 100 texts listed and plenty of other material to sustain even the most curious of minds. The web address is too long to give here, so to find out more, type Jesus Reel, as in reality, and Reel as in cinema reel, on any search engine.
To conclude this week's show, we take a step back from the life of Jesus to look at how films in general about the ancient world have fared in their historical accuracy. In particular, our guest commentator, Kathleen McDonough, looks at production design and what assumptions those designs lead us to make about this historical time period. McDonough, an award-winning documentary filmmaker, teaches in the Communications Department at the State University of New York at Fredonia.
Much of what we know about the ancient world, particularly its social and material life, we learned from the movies. There have been hundreds of feature films set in the ancient world, many of them blockbusters and classics. As a result, people have a stronger sense of what ancient Rome looked like than any other period in history except the American West. We know how Roman aristocrats lolled on banqueting couches, how they drove chariots, or moved through crowded marketplaces. When we read that the stirrup wasn't used in Europe until the early Middle Ages, we can nod in recognition because we have seen countless Greek and Roman generals vault onto their horses without its aid. Hollywood prides itself on the historical accuracy of the sets, props, and costumes. From triremes built for naval battles in the 1925 version of Ben-Hur, the ring on Julius Caesar's hand as he's stabbed by Brutus in the 1953 film Julius Caesar, exact reproductions of mosaics in the villas of Spartacus in 1960, to the digitally recreated Colosseum and Gladiator in 2000. All this is the work of art directors, who are often aided by a team of researchers. The emphasis on verisimilitude is essential to help the audience suspend disbelief and become emotionally engaged with the characters on the screen. And Hollywood uses authenticity to market the films. Movie trailers featured the magnificent sets and advertised casts of thousands, particularly trailers for the blockbusters of the 1950s, The Robe, Quo Vadis, and the epic that broke the bank in 1963, Cleopatra. The promise of spectacle was a way of enticing audiences away from the newest form of entertainment, television. But many historical epics offer more than just an accurate reconstruction of how the past looked. Instructors can use historical feature films in the classroom as a springboard to discuss larger issues. For example, the art direction, costumes, script, and acting in Spartacus all highlight the incredible gulf between rich and poor, free and slave, in ancient Rome. With the contrast between gracious villas and dark cramped quarters, elegant togas and coarse tunics, complex rhetoric and simple statements, and the differences in the manner of walking, posture, and gestures. Many films show the ill treatment of gladiators and slaves doing hard labor in mines or on galleys, but the casual disregard for the humanity of the domestic slaves, in Spartacus, counteracts the stereotype of the content slave, the buddy and confidant found in Plautus, Shakespeare, the opera, and many films. The visual emphasis on family in the rebel camp, shots of parents and children together, as well as Spartacus's desire to have a son born free, serve as reminders that the institution of slavery destroyed the family throughout history. The Hollywood epic can not only bring sparkle and flash to the classroom, it can also generate worthwhile discussions and critical analysis of the past.
You've been listening to Kathleen McDonough, an award-winning documentary filmmaker who teaches in the Communications Department at the State University of New York at Fredonia. That brings us to the end of another week of Talking History. As usual, we remind you that Talking History is a production of the Organization of American Historians, that our producer is Fiona Beatty, that our studio engineer is Alex Smith, and that the opinions offered by our guests on Talking History do not necessarily reflect those of the program staff or of the Organization of American Historians. To learn more about Talking History or the OAH, visit our website at oah.org. And finally, we invite you to send us your comments on this show by email, if you wish, to talkinghistory@umkc.edu or by regular mail to Talking History, care of the Department of History at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, 64110. Until next week, this is your host, Brian LeBeau, wishing you happy holidays.